First case, City of Livonia, Employees Retirement Fund versus Boeing. Mr. Isaacson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Eric Isaacson, representing the City of Livonia Retirement Fund as lead plaintiff in the securities fraud class action concerning the statements that Boeing Company made about the Dreamliner 787 back in May and June of 2009. The central question presented by the appeal is whether the complaint states facts that raise a strong inference of the defendant's scienter with respect to those statements. That means that it has to plead facts that make the defendant's knowledge of falsity or recklessness with respect to the falsity or false or misleading character of their statements at least as strong as any opposing inference. I think that the inference on the facts that are pleaded is quite compelling.
Why didn't a lawyer talk to Singh?
Well,
it's your whole case.
Well, for a number of reasons, Your Honor. Singh was not available at the time that the initial complaint in the case was filed. The case was filed in November.
I mean, after the investigator reports on him, why didn't a lawyer talk to him?
Because Singh didn't want to cooperate further. Mr. Singh was terminated at Boeing on January 15th, 2000.
When did she turn in her report to you?
She sent the report to us on February 21st. We were subject to the court's order when we were appointed on January 15th as lead plaintiff to file an amended complaint by February 22nd. So we were finalizing the complaint for filing on the 22nd when we received the email on the 21st. We immediately evaluated what was in that email, made the decision that we probably should follow up further with Singh and include some allegations concerning Singh in a further amended complaint.
When was it that you could no longer talk to Singh? He wouldn't talk to you anymore?
In April.
Well, between February and April, why didn't you speak to him before you filed your... Well, maybe you had to file on 27, but why didn't you speak to him as soon as you could?
Well, we had to file the complaint, amended complaint, on the 22nd
right.
of February. You're getting to the end of February. We start evaluating the information that we had gotten from
Singh. How could you evaluate it without a lawyer talking to him?
We could evaluate what our investigator had told us. You know, the Supreme Court has recognized...
Why didn't you want to... This is your key guy. Why didn't you want to talk to him?
Your Honor, the fact that we sent the investigator back to contact Singh to see if we could talk with him in April...
I don't understand. We're in February, February 21st. You get this report. You should realize this is key. You have to have something more than what you had without Singh. So why wouldn't you want to talk to Singh forthwith?
Well, we file an amended complaint on the 22nd. We want to go talk with Singh in April. He won't talk with us.
Why the interval between February 22nd and April?
Because it's a firm that has a lot of cases and a lot of work to do and is following up a lot of leads. It's not like Singh is the only part of the investigation that's going on in this case, and it's not like that's the only case that the lawyers have. We typically rely on investigators to develop initial leads and then to follow up.
At what point do you talk to the person whom the investigator is interviewed?
Well, here it would have been in April, quite frankly. And then it's in May, after Singh will not speak to us, that we end up, I think, on May 20th, seeking leave to file the amended complaint with the facts that were obtained from Singh that were corroborated by what was in the public record. It was corroborated by what Boeing itself had said on June 23rd when it said that they had known for weeks.
The problem you have with Singh is he wasn't employed by Boeing, right?
He was employed by Infotech, which was a contract.
Don't fence with me. I asked you. He's not employed by Boeing. Is that correct?
As a matter of labor law,
Look,
he was not employed.
What do you mean as a matter of labor law? He's not an employee of Boeing. Just say yes or no.
Not an employee of Boeing.
Okay, you're not an employee of Boeing. What is the likelihood that Boeing would give access to its trade secrets to a non-employee?
You have a stress engineer working on the mid-body section of the plane who appeared to have access to those facts. He knew the details and provided considerable detail in his description of it. It was in the mid-body section, the plane, mid-body integration section that he's working on, the plane's wings attached to that part of the plane, and Boeing itself in its public statement said this is a very complex area.
My impression is that you think he had access to much more than just, you know, the engineering drawings or engineering analyses just of that single, the single issue, those stringers on the wing assembly.
Well,
can you assert that he had access to more extensive files of Boeing?
We asserted what he told our investigator. His online resume indicated that he was a Boeing chief engineer. He had a bio online with Sheffield University that said that he was a chief engineer with Boeing working on the Dreamliner 787-8 and 9. We thought that we had sufficient corroboration of his position in the company. It's only after we identified him, volunteered his identity to Boeing that...
No, that's not my question. You know now that he's not an employee of Boeing, never an employee of Boeing. How likely is it that how extensive access to a company's files will a non-employee be given?
I am not in Boeing, so I can't say I know that.
Well, you could ask Boeing, right?
Well, that would be in discovery, and would be nice if we could take some depositions. We haven't taken any depositions here, Your Honor.
You ask the judge to let you have, by analogy to Twombly and Iqbal, to allow you to have some preliminary discovery to enable you to file a complaint that might withstand 12b-6.
We oppose their motion citing Rule 12d.
That's not my question. I asked you a simple question. Did you seek preliminary discovery to learn whether you might be able to file a complaint that would withstand a motion to dismiss?
No, Your Honor. We were already in discovery at the point that this issue came up. And, you know, depositions were going to start in May when the district court issued its order. We also, you know for a fact at this point that Singh was right about many of the details that somebody outside of the company wouldn't know. But if you're talking about what we had a reasonable...
Is it that Singh would know of communications between Boeing employees and their CEO?
Well, he's working with the mid-body integration team, saying he's telling us he's working on a wing and mid-body integration group to basically do stress analysis, which is exactly what we're talking about.
No, but why would he be privy to emails to the CEO of Boeing?
Because I'm not certain that he would be privy to the emails, as in copied on them, but that doesn't mean he's not going to see them or know of them in the course of his work, Your Honor.
Why? Why would he know about something being sent to the CEO?
Because they need to keep the CEO in the loop on problems that are as important as this.
But they don't have to tell this contractor about their communications with the CEO of their company.
They may not have to tell him, but it seems to me fairly likely if he's working on the problem with them that they will let him know that they're doing it. And,
it strikes me as extraordinary. I mean, these people, these low-down engineer people, they must be very reluctant to be sending emails to their boss, let alone to the CEO of the company, let alone showing them to a contractor. Doesn't that strike you as odd?
Well, it does not strike me as odd given what we knew about him at the point that we filed the second amended complaint, that he knew what he was telling us. He was not telling us at that point that he was a contractor. At that point, he was telling us that he was a Boeing chief engineer. And that's what his resume said, which was online, which he apparently put online shortly after he was terminated, the same day the City of Livonia pension system was appointed as lead plaintiff. It was, you know, further corroborated by the online bio at Sheffield University website.
Well, you admit he's not a his biography is phony, right?
Well,
he wasn't employed by Boeing. He's not a Boeing chief engineer. He never was. I don't know how that helps your case.
Well,
that he has a phony resume.
I don't think that it helps our case that Boeing contends he has a phony resume. Are
you really still suggesting that he is employed by Boeing? Or was
I think he's
employed?
Probably not, Your Honor. But Boeing presented declarations of their employees to contradict the complaint's allegations. And the judge cited those declarations and Mr. Singh's testimony, which is deposition testimony, saying, in her opinion, that a conflict between plaintiff's allegations and later developed facts had arisen. That's not a basis for dismissing a complaint under Rule 12b-6. That's a basis for having a hearing on summary judgment after full discovery that's necessary for summary judgment, Your Honor. I see I'm going into my rebuttal time.
Question. What would Boeing, suppose Boeing learns before the Paris Air Show that, you know, they have the real problem with the wing and they're not going to be able to fly. So, and that means that that first flight, which was scheduled for sometime after the Paris Air Show, will have to be canceled. Suppose they know that. If they know that, what is the gain to them from concealing that information until after the Paris Air Show? What do they gain by that?
The Paris Air Show is all about public relations, and it would have been very bad public relations to go to the Paris Air Show and say, we're not ready for first flight like we've been
telling
you.
Why is that any worse than saying afterwards, oops, you may have thought at the Paris Air Show that we were all set for our first flight, but no, we have to cancel it.
For one thing,
why is that better than saying in advance?
For one thing, your customers who have committed to buy your Dreamliner product will go over to the booth that Airbus has there and start talking with them about the competing
S350. They'll do that as soon as the announcement is made after the Paris Air Show. They still can cancel. It's not as if the Paris Air Show is the deadline for cancellation.
That's not a deadline for
cancellation. Talking about a couple of weeks. What do they gain by a couple of weeks of deception?
It's a question of good press versus bad press at the Paris Air Show. We don't need.
They're not selling they're not selling potato chips to consumers. How much does this plane cost?
A lot.
What's the sales price?
I don't have it.
It's many millions.
Yes.
It's tens of millions. So you think the people who buy a plane for tens of millions of dollars and have a right of cancellation are not going to cancel because they're told about this after the Paris Air Show instead of before the Paris Air Show?
I think that at the margin, a few might. That's not the major concern. It's a lot like the Talabs case on
Dreamliner. I don't believe that. These people have, and we know what's happened recently with the Dreamliner. These companies, if they think there's something wrong with the plane, they're going to cancel. And it's going to be the same cost to Boeing, whether this happens 2 weeks earlier or 2 weeks later.
And Talabs, this court observed.
Not Talabs. I talk about this case.
That they may have hoped they'd come up with a fix, Your Honor.
Well, but okay, that's a whole other weakness of your case.
That's not a good defense.
It's a whole other weakness of your case. If they think this is fixable, if they think they may be able to make the first flight date, then fine. They don't have to disclose every uncertainty that they have, right?
Well, they've said that it's passed the tests, Your Honor.
They said the tests were complete. That's not the same thing as saying they passed the test. the tests were complete. What they didn't say was that the tests revealed problems that they hoped they could fix, but they're not sure they could fix them, right?
They said all necessary tests for first structural tests for first flight were complete.
Yes, but to say that a test is complete doesn't tell you what the results of the test. You could take a bar exam, you've completed the test, and you flunk, right?
Yes, I suppose, but it's misleading if you...
Well, I don't understand. Are they supposed to say the tests are incomplete?
Well, the test has failed. You don't put out a press release bragging about how the initial results are positive.
But suppose the tests are completed. What do you mean initial results are positive? They say the test is complete. They think that there's a chance, you know, a non-negligible chance, that this problem can be solved in time for the flight. What's this? Why is that fraud?
Because they went to Paris and said the plane was ready to fly when they were trying to find a fix for a problem that they knew was serious.
What do you mean? They said ready to fly? Is that a quotation?
It said that they were... The McNerney on May 27th said it will fly in June. Scott Carson at the Paris Air Show said they're absolutely committed to first flight within the next 2 weeks. He says, I believe it could fly today, and he said it definitely will fly this month. Those are direct quotes of the defendant, Mr. Carson, who certainly was in the loop on these things. It's hard to believe that he was not informed about the product that was one of the company's most important, that he had been sent to Paris to discuss and talk about. And they put out a press release saying that they were beginning to build the first planes for delivery to customers on June 17th. I think that the inference that they knew there was a serious problem that caused these positive statements to be misleading is an extraordinarily strong one, just like the inference was strong that Notabart knew what was going on and that the company knew what was going on.
How long was the first flight delayed?
It was delayed until mid-December of 2009.
So 6 months or six
yes.
months?
Yes.
I need to clarify one chronological point before you sit down, and that is that you were aware at the time that the Second Amendment complaint was filed that the confidential source, Singh, was no longer cooperating?
We were aware that he said he told our investigator he did not wish to cooperate further because he was working on a project with Boeing. She asked him if he wanted to withdraw any of the statements that he had made previously, and he said no, he did not want to. So given the fact that he did not, at that point, wish to repudiate what he had said, given the fact that he provided enough detail that it seemed to us that he had access to this information and that it was corroborated by what the Wall Street Journal said, that they know the top executives and engineers both had known since May of the problems, what the Seattle Times reported that their supplier of the wings, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries,
knew it. I just asked a chronological point. You did have that knowledge.
We had the knowledge that he would not cooperate further, so we would have to go without having lawyers speak with him if we were going to plead the complaint with those additional paragraphs, but we believe that they were...
That was all my question.
Thank you very much.
Did you ask to be able to conduct, to depose him?
No, Your Honor. I mean, there was a deposition after we disclosed his identity. The defendants noticed his deposition.
Wait, I don't understand. You did not... When you discover that he won't cooperate with you, what steps would you have liked to take?
I would have liked to find a further witness who would cooperate or take further discovery to verify what he'd said.
You wouldn't have wanted to do anything more with Singh. You'd drop Singh and you'd look for someone else. Is that what you're saying?
We would continue to develop all the sources we could, Your Honor.
But you dropped Singh.
We did not notice Singh's deposition.
Right.
You did not drop Singh.
Well, we certainly did not notice his deposition.
Well,
we identified him to the defendants. He was a party who had some knowledge of what was going on.
But the sole difference between the iteration of the complaint that had preceded this one are the Singh allegations. So you did not drop him, despite knowing that he was no longer cooperating.
we did not drop him from the complaint that we then filed. That didn't mean that he wasn't going to be deposed. It was pretty certain he was going to be deposed. And we told the defendants who he was on August 30 before they'd served any discovery on the point.
But what could you do with Singh at a trial?
With Singh at a trial would depend on what he would be saying at that point. Right now, I don't think that anyone would want to be calling Singh at a trial.
But you didn't want to nail him down in a deposition.
Well, we did nail him down in a deposition. In the deposition, we pointed out that his resume said he was a Boeing chief engineer. We pointed out that his resume said he worked on the 787-8 and 787-9. And he said, oh, those are typos. My resume has hundreds of typos. I'm not responsible for the contents of my resume.
So what would you do at a trial with Singh? I don't understand.
We probably would not be doing much at a trial with Singh, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'll give you more time, Mr. Isaacson.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Here from Mr. Wolf.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Eric Wolf, counsel for the defendants in this case. Your Honors, this case is about plaintiff's fundamental and material misrepresentations. And those misrepresentations were made directly to the Court. And they were about Singh's being in a position to know and that he had firsthand access to internal Boeing documents, including emails to the CEO. And those were the district court's words, fundamental misrepresentations, material misrepresentations, directly to the Court. And those were unquestionably the reason the Second Amendment complaint was not dismissed. And the district court was very clear about that. But the misrepresentations were not just on the face of those allegations. They were statements made in briefing and in open court. And confidential sources are troubling. And this court and others have struggled with the PSLRA and how do you assess these confidential sources. What's really notable about this case is they only had one. Only one. Not 26 or 5 like other notable cases in this circuit. And the way they got over the hurdle was that they vouched to the district court. They really vouched to the district court. And they assured the district court that they had, and this is their own words, and as Mr. Isaacson discussed, this is about someone they never met and who was no longer going to have any contact with them. And really, nothing had changed since that February meeting. They just went back and said, will you confirm this? But having never met him, when it came time to defend the Second Amended complaint, they filed a brief, and twice in that brief, they said, this is smoking gun evidence. That was a direct quote. That we should be able to survive on one source because it's a smoking gun source. And then there was a hearing later in the case where they stood up, again, speaking about a witness they've never met, and they said directly to the court, as the court is exploring, is this person enough? They said, he's seen the documents. He's seen the documents. They said that in open court. There was no basis for saying that. They also said, at the same hearing, given the way they had alleged things and, you know, a wing integration team and mentioning various Boeing vice presidents, or actually just one, they got one wrong, The district judge observed to Boeing, I'm surprised, given the specificity of the allegations, that you don't know who this is, clearly thinking that this is somebody fairly high up, that given the description, Boeing would know who this would be. And plaintiffs, again, having never met this person, having corroborated nothing he said, told the district court in open court, we believe they know who it is. We believe, based on the allegations, that they know who this is. Basically confirming the judge's misperception that this is somebody fairly high ranking. And finally, and this was a fairly pernicious inference that was drawn, once Singh's name was revealed, and within 24 hours on the defense side, all we can think is this has been a fraud on the court. The allegations are nowhere close to who this person is. It's all wrong. He's not who they say he is. He hasn't seen what they said he had seen. And it is extremely implausible, even on the face of it, But if you believe he's a very high-ranking person, then it becomes more plausible. We filed declarations. They're in the record. One of them, Your Honor, is by Mr. O'Grady at Boeing. It talks all about the access to emails on the side of body and how restricted that is. And there's a person who keeps a list, and there are special ID badges and everything. And the notion that Singh had access to that is absurd. And, in fact, the Boeing engineers who sat on top of the project that he was on, which had nothing to do with the side of body joint. It had to do with this aerodynamic piece that connects the frame to the wing. It's nothing to do with the side of body joint. But even those somewhat senior Boeing engineers, they note, this is in the Mustafa Declaration and Rossman Declaration and the Meyer Declaration. These are all in the appendix. They note that they didn't have access to any of that. And they don't know why they would ever need it. So the access was exactly as restricted as your question suggested. But we filed those declarations to tell the court, they have misled you. They have misled you. What they stood up in court and told you, all this stuff about smoking gun evidence, they have misled you. And the brief that plaintiffs filed in response, the lead argument of that brief was, how can Boeing say this? They haven't even deposed him. They haven't even noticed his deposition. That is in bold italics in their brief. Boeing hasn't even noticed his deposition. Clearly implying to the district court, we're not afraid of a deposition. And we think this person will go to a deposition and say the things we pleaded. Even though they've never met him, they haven't had any contact with him for months. He is part of a central dispute in the case. They don't reach out to him. The first time any attorney in the case had any contact with Singh was when he responded to Boeing's subpoena, didn't know what to do. He went to the offices of Perkins Coie in Seattle because that was the return address. And he had a few documents, and he had an annotated subpoena. And that's all in the record under the affidavit of Steve Coe. That was the first time any attorney had met with him. And then Boeing did a declaration with him and noticed his deposition. And in working on the declaration, that was the first time he'd ever seen the complaint. Even though plaintiffs had said to the district court, we went back to the source. And in their briefing, it is coy. In the briefing, you will find expressions like, plaintiffs' lawyers and their investigator interviewed the sources, muddying up just who's doing what. There are lots of references to just plaintiffs. Plaintiffs twice confirmed with the source the information that was provided. Well, it was when Boeing worked on his declaration, that was the first time that he had ever seen the complaint. And then his deposition. In his deposition, he made abundantly clear through a day's worth of enormous frustration and anger and eventually just complete despair. He doesn't know anything. There's no way that he provided the information that was put into the complaint. He doesn't know anything. But plaintiffs, after Boeing began the examination, plaintiffs showed up, or plaintiffs were there, and they were all over him. And they used this stuff from the internet, and they cross-examined him on it. Clearly believing, as Your Honor's question suggested, well, he has phony resumes, and you knew they were phony. So we believe the district court had a duty to police the lawyers in the courtroom for the misrepresentations made directly to the court. We believe the conduct and the district court's findings about it do warrant sanctions.
Well, Mr. Isaacson said that at the very end of his argument, he was quoting Boeing officials as saying that the plane would fly on schedule.
So he quoted statements from the Paris Air Show. And there is a very important distinction that needs to be understood about first flight and the reason that everything was delayed. The plane was not delayed. First flight wasn't delayed because the plane couldn't fly. And so when Scott Carson is at the Paris Air Show and says, I personally believe the plane can fly today, and statements of that nature, if you're just talking about a ceremonial first flight or something like that, then the plane can fly. The problems in testing occur at 105% of the design limit load, which the design limit load is the maximum load that any one plane in service, of all the planes out there flying, that any one plane would experience in its entire life. So it's meant to be like something really, really bad, a storm, something of that nature. That's where the problems are showing up. Okay, first flight is nothing like that. First flight is a very simple flight, wheels down the whole time. So if you're just talking about that, the plane can fly. The reason it gets delayed and the reason there was all this analysis and what they're trying to figure out, they're analyzing the loads, and then they're looking at what kind of loads do you need to do a productive flight test. Flight test is harrowing. Flight test is stall. They do flutter testing where they get the wings bouncing up and down. They have all kinds of things they need to do in a flight test.
I didn't know how planes
flew. It's scary. That's what they're analyzing. That's what they need to understand. And the conclusion they reach, and the reason it got delayed, was that looking at the strain gauge data, they're getting results that are not matching their models, and they need to figure that out. They decide that the wing needs a fix. Now, if at that point you're at a crossroads, because if you still think you can do some flying, you can do some testing, and you can test the systems and whatnot. I mean, it can still be productive. But if it's too restricted, and this is what was announced on June 23rd, if the flight envelope is too restricted, then it's just not worth it. Go make the change, get it set, and then do productive flight testing. Do everything in flight testing you want to do. And that's the choice that was made. But that internal debate within the company, I mean, it's not, none of this stuff is like it's depicted in the complaint or as it was depicted from the podium. Like it's some green light, red light test. So we did a test on April. Oh, green light, we passed. It's not like that. There are thousands of strain gauges on this joint. You have to figure out what's going on. On May 3rd, what was announced was exactly what Your Honor said. The test was complete. They bent the wing 18 feet up in the air. It was complete. The initial results were positive. They didn't see anything initially that was wrong. The data are still being analyzed. That was the public announcement. There's nothing false in that announcement. They went on, and there was a different test, not for a first flight. It was on May 22nd. There was an anomaly near 105% of design limit load. And by the way, this repeated statement here today and in their brief that the sealed appendix corroborates what they pleaded and corroborates the source, that is absolutely not true. And in fact, you can go through the sealed appendix and you'll hear exactly the story. You'll see on the original documents exactly the story I'm telling you. There was an anomaly on a May 22nd test. It was at 104% of design limit load. Not 125%, like the complaint says. There was no failed April test that everyone knew about. They don't have a single document.
Counsel, if I could interrupt for a minute. This whole discussion, sort of getting into the weeds of the merits of the claim here, illustrates the procedural anomalies pursuant to which this case comes to us. There was a initial denial of the motion to dismiss the second amended complaints. The judge, in the ordinary course of deciding that, took the Singh allegations as true and said that they were enough to cure the deficiencies in the prior iteration of the complaint. And then that opened the discovery spigot. And so now we have a more developed factual record, but what we really still have before us is a motion to dismiss that's supposed to be decided on the pleadings. And I don't know how you propose to resolve that. The way this all unfolded was somewhat unorthodox.
Yes, it was. Well, let me speak directly to the procedural issue. I only talk about the sealed appendix because statements are made about what can be found there that are inaccurate. But on the procedural question, we have a 12B6. The judge has to apply the PSLRA, which is sort of beyond the normal 12B6 standard because you have to evaluate inferences and competing inferences. You have the face of the allegations. They are presented in a way that is ambiguous. He is a Boeing chief engineer. That's what they say. What does that mean? That could mean very senior engineer within Boeing, high-ranking insider with lots of access to emails and things like that. Or it could mean some fellow who works for a contractor whom we could find a resume on the internet where he's calling himself a Boeing chief engineer. That's your range of inferences as you decide a 12B6 motion. The judge hears from the lawyers, and plaintiffs tell the judge, these allegations, we want the highest amount of inferences for our side. They are, quote, smoking gun. They say that twice. They lead her to believe that when they say Boeing chief engineer, it's a high-ranking insider. So that, those are the inferences the judge brings to deciding the 12B6 motion. And with those inferences, if you can get by with just one confidential source, like they would have to be really strong inferences like that. The judge learns that they misrepresented those things. The judge learns that those inferences should not have been drawn. And so what we ultimately have in the dismissal, and the district court describes this very well, it's not so much that she's considering facts. She is correcting for misrepresentations in court, which is beyond 12B6.
As a sanction, then, are we to construe this decision as a dismissal of the Second Amended complaint as a sanction for fraud on the court, or as a revisitation of the Rule 12B6 motion, or what is its core?
Well, the order is ambiguous on this, but there are any number of pathways out. The court does say, I can reopen this and reconsider for three different reasons, and the three that are given are fraud on the court, carelessness of counsel, misperceptions by the court itself. Those are three that are given, and any of those will do. In the end, what the court has to do becomes very, very narrow, because the complaint can only survive if you give maximum weight to those confidential source allegations and you treat them as credible and compelling and you believe this is a high-ranking insider. As soon as you take away almost anything from those allegations, if she had asked at a hearing, for example, a plaintiff's counsel, when you say Boeing chief engineer, are you telling me this is somebody high up in Boeing, like a vice president? And they had just stepped back and said, our investigator has found a resume on the internet where he has described himself as a chief engineer. I think at that point, it's over.
Well, aren't you really saying the second amended complaint, if that's the one we're talking about, is a fraud? And when you get rid of it, you're back to the first amended complaint, which he'd already dismissed, right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
I gather from what Mr. Isaac says, and maybe he can correct it, there's actually no factual dispute anymore about Singh. He's not a chief Boeing engineer. He doesn't provide any help for the plaintiffs, and they don't plan to call him as a witness or anything like that. So it's as if the Second Amendment complaint had never been filed, right? Isn't it?
That's all fair, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Isaacson, give you another couple of minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The notion that they were just talking about a ceremonial first flight at the Paris Air Show is not how it was understood. Securities analysts said it was the biggest news of the day that the Boeing 787 was ready for first flight. Nobody interpreted it as a ceremonial first flight like the Wright brothers of 59 seconds at Kitty Hawk or something like that. We put the investigator's affidavit and notes before the court in connection with their motions regarding Mr. Singh.
Boeing stock price jump on the announcement? Is that...
There are instances where the stock price went up on statements that the company was ready for first flight or was going to be flying soon. And we identify those in several paragraphs.
Way of damages?
There's a 10%, 10 to 12% stock drop at the end of the class period on the announcement, Your Honor.
Well, yeah. So what are you seeking in damages?
I'm not sure what the total amount comes to, Your Honor.
I'm asking for certainty.
It would probably be hundreds of millions.
Hundreds of millions?
Yes, Your Honor. Now,
how large is your class?
I don't know the size of the class. It's a very large company, very actively traded, Your Honor. With respect to getting a deposition of Mr. Singh before we pleaded the information from him, we're subject to the PSLRA discovery statement.
You don't want his deposition. You said to me he's not going to help you.
At this point, I understand that he's not going to help me.
So if he's not going to help you, the Second Amendment complaint is out.
Well, Your Honor...
Look, she dismissed the first complaint because she didn't have the smoking gun. Then you come back with Singh. Singh, the smoking gun. The smoking gun is, the smoke is has wafted away. There's no more smoke, no more Sing. without Sing, why aren't we back to the first complaint?
And the brief that we filed argues that the complaint states a claim even without Sing, Your Honor.
Well, that's fine. That simplifies the case. Yeah.
Based on the statements from the defendants themselves, what was reported in the press, the Wall Street Journal and the Seattle Times, indicating that they knew in May. Their announcement on June 23rd says that they had the data from the May tests when they went to the Paris Air Show, and that they postponed making a decision until after the Paris Air Show because the flight wouldn't be robust enough to be doing serious testing. People at the Paris Air Show did not know that it was merely a ceremonial flight that was being talked about. They thought Boeing was talking about something serious. There's been no fraud in the court. We've let the district court know that it was an investigator who had spoken to Sing. We put in her affidavit. We put in her notes. We put in her emails to counsel. And we offered to have her come testify. So there's no fraud in the court and no effort to mislead the judge at all, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Move on to our next argument. Hoosier.